The Sunday Baroque podcast is made possible by WSHU and the Friends of Sunday Baroque. You can find out more about the Friends of Sunday Baroque and find out how to become one yourself by visiting our website, sundaybaroque.org, under the Contact tab. Cellist Thomas Domenga is a renowned soloist, composer, and teacher whose own teachers and mentors included acclaimed musicians such as Leonard Rose and Mstislav Rostropovich. His repertory includes a full range of historical eras and styles of interpretation and composition, and he is an advocate for new music. He's also passionate about historical performance practice of Baroque music and a virtuoso performer of the classical and romantic repertory for cello. Thomas Domenga joins me to talk about his broad-ranging career as a world-class musician. Welcome.
Hello.
Hi.
Nice to talk to you.
I was reading another interview you gave in which you said that hearing the cellist of the Guarneri Quartet when you were still a boy was how you knew you wanted to be a professional cellist. I'm wondering what clicked for you in that moment hearing him.
Well, that's a very particular story. I was actually already studying the cello, but I was very young. I was 16. And the Guarneri Quartet came to my home city here in Switzerland, in Bern. And they played, it's quite a while ago, I don't say. So they were still very a young quartet in that sense. And I was very, very impressed, especially, of course, by the cellist, David Sawyer. And the story about what's amazing is that now I do play his cello. I came across it at Tiresias in London when I played exactly Bach and modern music, all the suites at Wigmore Hall. Mm-hmm. And they gave me the chance to practice at Tiresias, the auction house. And somebody came by and said, look at this cello, what do you think about this? And he gave me this Guarneri in my hands. At the time I had my Amati, which was also a fantastic cello. And this cello was really amazing. I mean, I was, first of all, very touched because very soon after he said, well, look, it's David Sawyer's Guarneri. And it's something that makes me almost cry, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like such a feeling that I had towards David Sawyer, whom unfortunately I never met actually. Right. In person. But later when I studied at Juilliard, I heard the Guarneri Quartet so many times, and it was for me one of the most amazing I say true stories that ever happened in my life. It's now 2 years ago since I have this cello.
Hmm. Well, tell me about the instrument. You know, how did you choose it? What is it about it that you love so much?
Well, what should I say? It's voice. It has an incredible bass. First of all, that's what I heard at the time. Some 40, 50 years ago, I can't remember how long it's ago, actually. Yes, the bass was the most touching thing that I remember, that I recall now still. Mm-hmm. And David Sawyer, this big man, I'm very tall too, by the way, myself, but he to me, he seemed like a giant, and with this cello, he just drew the bow and the sound just poured out of this instrument, and I just couldn't believe it. I was so impressed. And then when I played it many years later, it was really, it has that Italian sound. I mean, it's maybe a cliche to say that, but it's simply the truth. It's a cello with a big story, of course, and a big history, It's just so touching also to have it in my hands. Mm-hmm. And to be able to play on it and to find every day the new facets that is, you know, that make this voice, that you can look for things, you can treat it the way you want. It always sounds incredibly well. It's you can't kill this sound, if you know what I mean. It's a cello that takes a lot of pressure if you want to, but you can also just place the bow on a string and pull, and it'll have a fantastic, warm, and beautiful sound.
And my goodness, you certainly do give it a workout. If you just take a quick glance at your extensive discography, it is really breathtaking, the scope of your repertoire. I mean, Bach and Vivaldi and Handel, but Mendelssohn and Dvorak and Mozart and Schubert, but then also Elliot Carter and Arvo Pärt, and even your own compositions. You really, really like to mix it up. And I'm curious to know how you forged such a diverse career as a performer.
Well, I started like everyone else, like just learning the instrument, being aware of all the difficulties. And of course, I come from a very musical family, an artistic family. My father, still alive and at 96, paints every day still. He's a very, very good painter. My mother was an actress. And I have, we were seven children, and I had four elder sisters, all of them playing an instrument. So I just grew into this world of music and art. And later, one of my sisters at least turned away from music, became a puppet player. She has a theater here in Bern. And my other brother, who is not a musician, is an actor and a painter at the same time. And Patrick, my brother, is also a cellist. We actually have a few CDs together. And so where did I start from? Yes, the normal sort of studies with music. And what intrigued me all the time was, from an early age, was the improvisation. And I had a friend at the conservatory, a Czech composer, and he was a sort of a genius. You could give him a theme, and he would improvise a fugue in the style of Bach. So I was completely fascinated by this person, and I improvised with him sometimes. And I thought, well, that's really amazing if you can create music in the moment. And we never improvised on a theme or something, but really, how shall I say, instant composing. I would rather say that expression. I think it has to do with the intellect. You have to know what you're doing, actually. What sort of notes am I going to play, and how is the other person reacting to it? So that was a very big thing for me, and I never studied composition, for instance. And at one point, I felt like I wanted to try, and I wrote my first piece when I was maybe 26, something like this, a long time after I had studied. And from then on, I kept on writing pieces every year, a bit on the side, rather, because my schedule was rather playing the cello. And also, since I'm 26, actually, I do have a professorship at the Basel Conservatory. So I was very busy all the time, and the composing takes a lot of time, of course, as everyone knows. And I'm rather slow in composing, so I need a lot of time. But I do it again and again because I think it's important for my understanding of the music in general.
Sure. So, how did you find your specific creative voice as a composer? You say that you're rather slow as a composer. Do you have certain things you look to for inspiration, or are you inspired maybe by a particular other performer, or where does that come from? Where does that creative spark come from for you?
Well, that's always a good question and very difficult to answer. I think I have many composers, of course, that I adore or that really impressed me. Maybe my friend Heinz Holliger was one of them, a very extreme music writer. With him, I played a lot years ago. We did many recordings, and I played his music. And yeah, he always composed in a very, very extreme way for each instrument that mm-hmm. he would write for, and very difficult to play, to learn. And I'm sure he influenced me in some way, although I wouldn't say at all that I that my compositions would sound alike. Not at all. I think completely the opposite, actually. Mm-hmm. I try to, how shall I say it? I try to imagine also what is the person, who am I writing for? What fits to that particular player? Mm-hmm. Because it's true that I always wrote pieces. It was always meant for someone. I never had the time to write just to write a piece for my own pleasure so far, because it was always connected to someone who was asking me for it. So I think that plays a big role. I tend to write also so that the player doesn't spend hours and hours to learn the part. So it's in a way sort of simple writing with hopefully enough effect anyways to please. Mm-hmm. I think my music has a lot of humor in it, if I can say that. Mm-hmm. I don't count myself to a group of people who take themselves too seriously, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. I would never consider myself it maybe sounds stupid, a great composer or someone like that, something like that in that direction. I write music for my pleasure, really, mm-hmm. and for hopefully for the player's pleasures. Mm-hmm. And so far it's worked out really well, and I always still have ideas, musical ideas. It's of course difficult sometimes to start a piece because the very famous empty piece of paper in front of you. You have just lines, and you're supposed to put some black dots on it to make music. And this is always a moment which is actually very difficult, I find. But then when it starts, once it starts, I feel there's something, a flow in me, and then it just somehow works. I don't know if this explanation makes any sense, but I think it's very difficult to put my finger on it, to say why and where does it come from.
Sure, sure. On the other side of the same coin, though, you have a new recording of Johann Sebastian Bach's suites for unaccompanied cello, so those are really the holy grail for cellists. I wonder if you'll talk about what the Bach cello suites mean to you, and also more broadly what Bach's music means to you.
Yes, I think probably everyone agrees that Bach is maybe the greatest genius of all times. At least for me, that is the case. I can't think of any other composer who is really more of a genius. Not even Mozart, I think, because Bach, what strikes me with him is that I don't think any personal drama or emotional aspects of this particular human being is in his music directly. I think he's detached from that, like above all that, like you would say maybe with Schumann, mm-hmm. who had an incredible life, suffering, and you can immediately feel this in his music, and you have to try to, as an interpreter, to play that, to show that to the audience. Mm-hmm. With Bach, it's detached from all that. I think yes, we can call it a holy, holy music, an incredible detachment from all personal drama. And I think that makes it so interesting for us musicians to see the new every time you play, to find new aspects, to find out again, oh, I was wrong 5 years ago when I played this part here. I now hear a different harmony, because Bach, he didn't put so many harmonies, underlaying harmonies for the cello. Mm-hmm. And there's many possibilities always. And if you take the most simple one, of course, it can work. But there's one really great example. That's the fifth suite, because he wrote it also for lute and transcribed it himself. And there you find the harmonization is incredible. You would at many points not expect what he wrote for the lute. And I actually did take some of his harmony, of his chords, and included them in the suite, because I think I was allowed to do that, because it's really Bach's harmonization. And it's quite amazing if one studies that text. Mm-hmm. So the Bach suites are, like, you've certainly heard about that, everyone says, my Bible for the cellist. It's really the most incredible work which you can work on for many years. And it's amazing. This is the second time I've recorded this in my life, and yeah, the minute you're finished and you hear it again on CD, I think, oh, now I could do it again. I would do it this way. I would do it a little bit differently. Mm-hmm. And I think that also proves that it's a music which is never ending, with never ending possibilities. Mm-hmm. for the cellist.
Mm-hmm. And of course, now you're playing it on your new cello.
That's right.
Yeah. So Bach was also a remarkable performer, a composer, and a teacher. And you have also had so many great teachers and mentors. Are there any lasting philosophies or attitudes or anything in particular you make a point to pass along from your teachers and mentors to your own students?
Yes, how shall I say that? I was my very first teacher when I was when I had the experience with the Corneille Quartet, that when I was 16, was a pupil of Maurice Gendron, Walter Grimmer he was called, and my second teacher was Antonio Janigro. Don't know how famous he is over in the United States, but mm-hmm. he was a very, very noble player. Mm-hmm. And beautiful cellist. And then the third was Leonard Rose, and Rostropovich was also, you know, one of his unique courses, the master classes that he gave in Bath, 6 weeks long, very intense. Mm-hmm. And so all these people gave me, of course, each of them something else. The maybe the picture of the bee who goes to all the flowers and picks up some something from each of them and then makes its own honey out of it. Mm-hmm. I think this is a beautiful picture. I can give my students some of each, and maybe what for me what was most important in cello teaching was maybe Antonio Janigro's philosophy. Mm-hmm. Because he always connected the music or the cello technique to the music. He would never say, look, you have to use this and this finger or this and this bowing because that's the way you should do it. But there was always a connection to a musical place or a part in a concerto or in a suite. Mm-hmm. To quasi prove that this for that particular place you had to do it this and that way. Mm. And that's something I think is really important, because there are many cello teachers, of course, who are maybe great teachers on cello technique, but the cello technique is detached from the music. So the danger is that things will sound alike, and I think that was really something that stayed with me by Antonio Janigro. That it was actually the opposite. The music would demand a certain technique, and that technique could once be this way or that way or the other way. So this is what I try to do with my student. I try to give them the right musical idea to conquer their problems, to so that they can really play a piece the way they want it. And what's maybe important is, I think it's very important that we try to help an individual to be their own, to keep their own character, to become a musical and artistic performer. Mm-hmm. I think it takes a long time. It takes much longer than just learning the cello to play right and then play the music. But to play the piece of music right away with the technique that it demands. But this is a much slower process. So many of my students are sometimes a bit impatient, so to say. But I've noticed almost every time towards the end of their studies, after 3-4 years, for instance, for a bachelor, they all of a sudden realize and what it all meant, all mm-hmm. these 2-3 years before. And yes, it's a very positive feeling that I have towards teaching. I love to do it, and I love to be with the young people. They give me a lot also. It's really something, I think, that I wouldn't want to stop because I have enough of it. I heard many people who say, "Oh, I'm so glad when I can stop teaching." For me, it's really the opposite. I think it's a great thing to do.
Well, I am a huge fan of your artistry. I want to thank you so much for making the time to speak with me and making these brilliant recordings. I can't wait to hear your Bach recording.
Well, thank you. I hope you will enjoy it.